The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. Woo-hoo-hoo! A thrilling Monday night escapade between the Giants and the Eagles that leads in heartbreak for Eli Manning. You hate to see it. 23-17, Eagles win in overtime. You know Debo is excited if you listen to this podcast. And so go on iTunes and leave Debo a congratulatory note. Hey, like Debo, your team's 6-7. That's awesome. You're probably going to make the playoffs until you lose to the Cowboys at home and you don't have any wide receivers other than Greg Ward left. But good win over the Giants in overtime. Or whatever you want to do. Or leave a 5-star review rating. I'm not trying to kill Debo's joy here. I am trying to talk to Ryan Wilson, John Breach, and Shaw Wagner McGuff. And then after the break, we're going to talk about this game. We're going to talk about some of the Patriots stuff that come out. And then we're going to talk to Jonathan Jones. Long time friend of the program, first time appearance, our new colleague at CBS Sports. He was in New England, for the Patriots Chiefs game. We're going to talk about that. Just FYI, we do reference the Bengals videotaping stuff, sort of jokingly, because it's sort of snowballed a bit after that. So if you hear that later on after the break, that's why. Again, rate, subscribe, download. Ryan, did you enjoy a little Eli Manning Schadenfreude?
Well, I'm looking at his final stat line, 15 for 30, 203 yards, two touchdowns. And the 15 for 30 actually kind of shocked me. His first half was completely different than the second half. I was glad he had some success. I'm sure Debo wasn't happy about the first half when the Giants actually played relatively well against no one was out there.
By the way, we did get a request for – sorry, somebody requested that Debo jump on as the talent for the pod and – you go to be a producer.
Yeah, they call me old man Wilson, I believe, to be the which is accurate, and I'm okay with that. Debo deserves to bask in the glory of beating the mighty Giants team. But Darius Slayton played well in the first half. Again, no one was covering him, but he caught the ball thrown his way. It was a nice little swan song for Eli. Too bad the game is 60 minutes, or in this case, 67 and a half minutes or whatever it was, and not 30 minutes. But I don't know if this changes much for the Giants. I think Pat Shurmur's getting fired. I think Dave Gettleman's future is probably in doubt. I don't know if Eli Manning is going to retire, but he should probably think long and hard about it. And the Eagles live to fight another day. They got a lot of issues. You touched on it, Brinson. Injuries, inconsistency, questions about coaching decisions. I'll just put this one thing out there before I give up the mic. Last drive of the Eagles, fourth quarter, fourth and three from their own 30-ish. You're 2-11.
Last drive of the Giants, you mean.
Giants, sorry, yeah. What are you doing, Pat Shurmur? Go for it. Who cares if you don't get it? What happens?
So you're right. Look, the Giants scored 17 points in the first half. Their second half possession chart, punt, 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 end of half. I mean, you know, you're outclassed. You can tell that your defense is coughing it up against a really bad, you know, Eagles skill position group. And then you allowed them to get to overtime. 8 plays, 75 yards, 4 minutes and 50 seconds breach. It was an absolute evisceration by Carson Wentz. It was too easy. The Giants were gassed. Worth noting, Eli Manning's wife had sworn she would never come to Philadelphia again because of the things that they say about her husband. And she made an exception this time. Does that make you think, Breach, that Eli is walking away after this little
Swan song belly flop.
Walking away from Philadelphia, never coming back. Yes, but I do not. I don't think this means he's going to retire. Although maybe he should after that second half. He was 4 of 11 for 24 yards. That is about as ugly as it gets. And when you watch these two teams, watching really any NFC East game this season, I was almost rooting for overtime, because for me, watching two NFC East teams play is like watching the babies race on a basketball court, where like I just don't care about the talent out there. I just want to see a competitive game or a competitive baby race. And that's me watching.
I thought you were going to say like, I just want to see babies fall over.
Babies fall over too. That works. And maybe a baby could have gone 4 of 11 for 24 yards. So I am glad that Eli Manning, because, you know, the Giants were 8.5 point underdogs. No one was expecting anything from them in this game. And then Eli Manning come out and throw a 35-yard touchdown pass, then a 55-yard touchdown pass. Everyone was like, well, holy crap, this is totally an Eli move. This is what he does. You put him in a weird spot, shocks everyone, and we're all shaking our heads. And like Wilson said, unfortunately, it didn't last for 60 minutes. It only lasted for 30 minutes. But I was impressed the Giants had any fight in them. If anything, I thought this game is the argument that the NFC shouldn't get a playoff berth because the Eagles looked like trash. I know that they ended up winning, but Zach Ertz basically saved their season. Boston Scott had a huge, huge game. And they finally figured out that, hey, we don't have anybody to throw to. We've got to throw these short little passes to Boston Scott so that Carson Wentz doesn't get murdered. And, you know, Zach Ertz was the only person getting open downfield. So it was just, it was a crazy game and everything I would have expected from two NFC East teams playing on a Monday night.
I think we're underselling, or Breach and Wilson kind of underselling a little bit just how bad this game was. Like this was.
I compared it to baby racing.
This was, okay, but this is
babies,
my.
Babies pooping their diapers, Sean.
That's better. Pooping their diapers while they're playing basketball on a court that no one is watching or no one wants to watch. This game was so bad. The Eagles, for some reason, entered this game with three active wide receivers. And look, I know they have a lot of injuries, but I just don't think you can go into a game with only three active wide receivers. You have to sign somebody, a body or whatever. They lose Alshon Jeffrey early in the second quarter. They're down to two wide receivers. Later in the game, they had one active wide receiver in the game as they're trying to mount a comeback against the Giants. This game was so bad that in a game with Miles Sanders, Jay Ajayi, Saquon Barkley, former, you know, good running backs, are not all four, like some of them are actually still good. It was, as Breach said, Boston Scott, a former sixth round pick of the Saints, who was the best running back in this game. This game was so bad, you had the Giants dialing up on third and long a perfect flea flicker that the protection is so bad that the perfect flea flicker results in a little shovel pass to Saquon Barkley 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage. These two teams are terrible. Stop putting the NFC East on primetime. I don't want to watch these games. I can't believe it went to overtime. And the only silver lining is it,
Sean's big milk take of the week. No NFC East on primetime.
Alleged first ballot Hall of Famer Eli Manning now is below 500 in his career at 116, 117, and 0. You hate to see it.
I can't believe to see it.
I can't believe Sean didn't mention this as his super great thing to come out of this game. I joked on Twitter, Sean has maybe one or two good tweets a year, tops. One of them came out of this game. He tweeted, if Game of Thrones finale had aired immediately after this game, everyone would have loved it. And that's the truest thing ever said. And props to Sean for finally saying something funny.
By the way, for the first time in their 87-year rivalry, the Eagles now lead the head-to-head with the Giants 86-85-2. Isn't it fitting that Eli Manning falls below 500 and tilts the Eagles to above 500 in a game where, look, Eli didn't play that well, but he's a 38-year-old benched quarterback who came in a tough spot on the road with a marginal talent surrounding him, a lot of injuries, a bad offensive line against a desperate Eagles team, and he threw the ball in the air in the first half, and the Eagles decided not to cover Darius. I don't want to dog on Eli. Like it was kind of cool, and I'm obviously not the biggest Eli supporter in the entire world, but I always liked the Manning brothers and the Manning family. And so I found it cool that Eli got to pop in there and sort of have a swan song. And frankly, Pat Shurmur should be fired. He's a clown.
Wait, you think?
He's a clown and a coward. The, look, Shurmur had his team with a 17-3 lead at halftime. The Eagles looked completely and utterly lost. They had no answers. Alshon Jeffrey's gone. Lane Johnson is gone. We know when Lane Johnson gets hurt, you know, Carson Wentz falls off a cliff. Wentz is getting pressured by the defensive line. Like, what's his name? Leonard Williams put that elbow in his chest. It was like he was hopeless. It's over. He can't get it done. And all the Giants had to do was put their foot on the gas and attack vertically one or two or three more times. And they were going to get a wide open Sterling Shepard or a wide open Darius Slayton. They were going to hit on a deep shot and it was going to snuff out the Eagles' hopes. And instead, Pat Shurmur, cause he's a coward, ran the ball with Saquon Barkley over and over again and tried to have Eli be accurate in short yardage areas where the Eagles cornerbacks could squat on the Giants receivers, press them, get physical with them. Eli couldn't get the ball accurate enough. He needed to have a shot where he could throw it out deep and just let his guys run underneath it. And as a result, they didn't score a single freaking point in the second half. Carson Wentz led two drives, one in the third quarter that was pretty good that gave the Eagles some life, a 10-play, 58-yard drive, 5.5 minutes. Not the world's greatest drive, but you get that drive, you get it within seven, and you just really got the feeling at that point in time that the Eagles were going to find a way to win this because the Giants had nothing on offense and were just completely gassed on defense. All in all, you know, we saw the Eagles ran 85 offensive plays. I mean, you got a bad Giants defense in the first place. They had nothing in overtime. They didn't have anything to tackle in overtime.
And that's the thing. 85 plays is a huge red flag, basically sort of supporting everything you just said. That Super Bowl when the Falcons were up 24-3. What was the score?
28-3. 28. Every person in the world that doesn't remember the score.
Well, it was an ass whooping. I know that. The point is that the Falcons.
Who were they playing?
The Falcons defense was on the field for 99 plays. That defense played really well against the Patriots for the first 3.5 quarters, and then things started falling apart. And that's the only way you can compare these two games, that they're both football games played in America. But the point is that the Giants defense looked absolutely gassed on that last drive when they were doing things in the first half that made you think, okay, this isn't the worst team in the world. What, John?
Well, I was just going to say, and to talk about how gassed they were, Brinson mentioned that they punted, that the Giants were punting the whole entire second half. They either went 3-and-out or 4-and-out on every single possession. There wasn't one time where they even had a 5-play drive. So they literally went bam, 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 punt or bam, 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 punt. And so you can't do that. That your defense doesn't
bam,
get
bam,
any.
Bam, 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 bam.
What is
bam,
a bam,
pebbles? Bam, bam, bam.
What is a 5-and-out? What does a 5-and-out sound like?
What did he ask?
Bam,
us?
Bam, 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 bam.
Oh, a 5. Oh, okay. Bam, 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 bam.
It would be. Bam, bam, bing, bam, bam, punt.
It's like the Friends clap. I argue about how many claps there are. I just found out that I was wrong. I don't want to talk about it. But, yeah, so you can't have – yeah, see, now Sean's not sure either. But, so if you're only on the field 3 or 4 plays every single series, your defense is going to be gassed, and they had no chance. And that's why, Ryan, you said at the very beginning that Pat Shurmur is a wuss for not going for it on fourth down. Your defense had no chance in overtime. Zero chance. Absolutely should have gone for it. They had nothing to lose.
And – let's not forget, too, that, like, I mean, these are just two – I mean, Doug Peterson has had an okay season, I think. I think Doug Peterson's a good coach. This has not been his, you know, masterpiece, the 2019
season. It's hard to win with no players. Players, players.
Yeah. I agree. Players, players, players.
Unless you're Mike.
I don't know what's happening there with the sound.
It sounded like a remix.
Yeah. Players, players, players.
Wilson, Wilson, Wilson.
Brian Wilson here to tell you about the players, players, players.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
Anyway, we got this, Evo.
once in the first half, Doug Peterson sent his he sent his punt team out, and Pat Shurmur sends out the punt return team, and then Doug Peterson sprints the offense back out there, and Shermer's like standing there like, huh? What? You can what? What is he doing? This is insanity. You can't sprint your offense back out there. And Doug just played chicken with him. And finally Shurmur begrudgingly called timeout, knowing he'd been de-pantsed in front of the entire cafeteria. Like just, you know, he's just standing there in his boxers. Everybody's looking at him laughing. He's like, fine, I'll call timeout. And then to make matters worse, in the second half with 47 seconds left, Doug Peterson leaves his offense out there on that fourth down and acts like he's going to go for it. So Shurmur doesn't call timeout. And then once it gets down to 17 seconds, Peterson calls timeout, sends his punt team out there and basically killed any chance that Shermer would have had to get the ball back and try to make a run. And like that's, Pat Shermer was just playing not to lose the entire second half. The Eagles were a great live bet. If anytime you fade the Giants for the rest of the year, do it. And yeah, you call the timeout at 17 seconds, right? And just, you know, look, it sucks because that could have been a cool win for Eli, but it's great for the Giants, great for the Eagles, I guess. How do you evaluate Sean Carson Wentz given the weather, you know, having to face an elite quarterback like Eli, missing all of his weapons, losing Lane Johnson, et cetera?
It's not all his fault. I think that's the way you got to preface it. But it's certainly, I think he shoulders as part of the blame. And I think there's moments in not just this game, but they've been banged up for most of the year. So like in every single game, but and the easy excuse is who is he throwing to? And look at all these drops, which is true. What was the game a couple weeks ago on fourth down? He throws this brilliant pass off his back shoulder, off his back foot that Nelson Aguilar drops in the back of the end zone that would have resulted, I think, in a tie or a win late. So it's not saying he's bad. But I think he has taken a step back, and there's something noticeably wrong with him. He just seems off, and it's outside the pocket where he used to create magic. And this is every week, and again, it's not entirely his fault. The offensive line's banged up. He has no one to throw to. But the problem is that you start looking at the contract, and they need to get it figured out with him because they don't want to find themselves in the same situation the Rams find themselves in that we talk a lot more about, which is – they're stuck with this quarterback for the next 3 or 4 years who might not be that good. I don't want to go there with Wentz. I think he's probably been a bit better, more consistent than Goff throughout his career. But then you add in his injury issues over the years and you add in declining production this year. And I think you are absolutely concerned about the long – not this year because, look, they might win the NFC East. They very much are alive. But I think no one thinks they're going to win a playoff game. So this is all about the long term. You think they're going to win a playoff game, Brinson?
Probably not, but I mean, like,
it's a bold statement from a guy who cheers for the Bears.
Oh, the Bears aren't going to be in the playoffs.
Well, I'm talking about last season and the Eagles. Remember who they beat?
I mean,
I'm aware.
I mean, I don't think they're going to win a playoff game, but it's like, let's see what happens to Lane Johnson and Alshon Jeffrey, and if they can get those guys back, and they got Ertz and Goddard, and I wouldn't put it past the Eagles with that coaching staff to be able to figure out a way to steal a playoff game.
If they play the Packers, they already beat the Packers once this season, so let's not pretend like there's no one in the playoff field they can't beat.
If the Eagles are 6-point dogs of the Packers in the playoffs, I'll take the Eagles all day.
I actually think the Packers are the only team the Eagles could conceivably beat playoffs.
They could beat the Vikings.
The Vikings beat them 38-20, and they got pommeled, man.
This team just lost to the Dolphins. Close your ears for a second, Debo, and they should have lost to the Dolphins. So don't act like they're the 2017.
Maybe they'll drive down to Jacksonville and steal Nick Foles back.
Yeah, this is the time of year you want him.
You call just,
like, I mean, like, the Eagles could be, the Eagles could beat the Seahawks, Vikings, or Packers. I don't think that's unreasonable.
Okay.
I think the 49ers would beat them by 50. I think the Saints will probably beat them by a ton. I think they could take the Seahawks because the Seahawks don't have that high power. The Seahawks only beat them 17-9 a few weeks ago. So there's a couple teams that I do think the Eagles could beat. They'll have them at home. It's not that far-fetched. I don't think they would pass the wild card round.
That was for the record, though, that 17-9 game was a 17-3 game. And then with 20 seconds left, Carson Wentz threw a touchdown pass. So that was a little bit more of a blowout than 17-9.
Somebody just got dunked on.
I don't think it's insane that they would beat the 49ers, honestly.
Will you stop it? What are you doing?
The 49ers need to run the ball, and the Eagles have
to run. Is Debo mad at you about something? You're trying to make it up to him?
No, I mean, you're just acting like it just can't happen. This is not like the Dolphins hosting a playoff game.
Like the Dolphins. They just lost to the Dolphins.
And let's not forget that every 7-win team that's ever made the playoffs has won a playoff game. Fun fact.
It this way.
It's just crazy that you're saying the home team hosting a playoff game can't win the playoff game. Like they have the necessary pieces.
Wait, let me ask you this. So if let's say the 49ers fall to the 5 seed or whatever, and they end up playing the Eagles. If they play 100 times, who's winning that game?
Well, they wouldn't play 100 times. That's the whole point of it. They only play once.
Yes, but you want to have probabilities, and that's how you sort of figure out. That's how they make lines and how to do all these things that you do for a living.
Yeah, so no, I'm aware, but the point Breach and I are making is that it's it is the randomness of the single game that makes it very possible that the Eagles could win the playoffs.
I'm asking, what are the chances they win the game? Dr. Semantics.
It's not 0%. I mean, that's the bottom line.
I'm asking what it is. What is it?
I'd say 30%.
Okay. That's fine.
I say like it's between 5 and 10%.
Okay, but again, you just said there's no chance they can win a playoff.
Okay, Brinson, when we say this, I'm aware it's a single elimination and weird things happen in football. I'm not saying this is guaranteed. I'm saying that if they come to the playoff game, I'm not picking them to beat any other team in the NFC in the playoffs, and I would guess there's a 90% chance they lose that game.
So Packers at Eagles first round, you're 100% taking the Packers.
No, I just said both teams are healthy. I would not take 100%.
It's
going to
be
so
awesome when like we're like firing up to do the podcast and after the Eagles beat the Packers in this wild card round.
I will be happy, by the way.
No, Sean's like, where is Debo? And he pops out of that wind, like that room behind Sean. He's like, you got dunked on. flies out to Oakland to dunk on Sean.
No, the Packers is one thing. But Brinson, you said I could see the Eagles beating the 49ers. And that's crazy talk.
I don't think it's a great matchup for him.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, that's kind of crazy.
I can't back you up on that one.
That's fine. Okay, I mean, look, the Eagles have a good defensive line, and they stop the run.
Well, and the hilarious thing
is Slayton and Eli Manning today.
Can you get pressure?
I can't hear you. Something must happen to your mic.
I mean, like, one of those teams that Eli won the Super Bowl with had had a garbage secondary, and they just got hot in the playoffs. It happens all the time.
All the time?
It happens pretty frequently. Didn't you have a Steelers team that was a wild card that made a run?
2005. Asked Breach how that worked out for the Bengals.
That's too soon to bring up, Ryan. I thought we agreed we're not talking about that ever again.
What was the Steelers record that year, though? Like, we're talking
11
about...
11-5.
Exactly. And, like, even when the Packers won that Super Bowl, they were still 10-6 when they entered the playoffs. These were good teams.
Debo.
This is going to be a 7-9 team making the
playoffs. Well, and I already said it. There have been two 7-win teams, and they both won a playoff game because you get to play at home, which is a huge advantage in the postseason.
How are you going to go against Let me apologize. 2-0. I should not have said... They're not winning a playoff game. I should have said they are probably not winning a playoff game. There you go. I'm sorry. Semantics.
That's helpful. Debo, where do you stand on this argument?
I mean, I'm probably a biased person to ask. I mean, I'm going to feel...
You're wearing an Eagles jersey, so that's just fair.
If we're in the playoffs, then I'm going to have some semblance of hope, but I agree that it's probably very unlikely. Like, I recognize this team's faults, a 6-7 team making the playoffs. There's going to be false hope associated with this season no matter what happens because of how bad the NFC East is. But
Debo's the person I want on the plane with me when the plane's going down because he is so optimistic. Hey, don't worry, he'll be okay.
I should not feel good right now, but I feel elated after that win. I feel fantastic.
What about this question? Who do we think is winning the NFC East? I mean, that's a much more interesting question to me than can this team win a playoff game? Like, we can save that for January when these teams get in. I still think the Cowboys are making the playoffs, and maybe that's it's crazy to, like, pick the Cowboys, and I would not go as far as, like, say it's automatic and it's for sure happening. But I would still rather have the Cowboys. I think they have worse coaching, but the fact that they are a team that is much more talented and much more healthy, which is probably more important, I would rather have them. And Dak is playing better than Wentz this entire season.
I think the Rams are going to beat the Cowboys this weekend, so that sort of throws a wrench in it, right?
Eagles have a easier path, I feel like.
Let's say the Cowboys go 1-1 and the Eagles go 2-0 in their 9 games. Then it still comes out of week 16, right?
Not right. If the Eagles win their next, how many games are left? 3?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if the Eagles win their next, the Eagles could lose to the Cowboys and still get in.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, because the Cowboys could go 1-2. They lose to the Rams.
Yeah. But then they're
to the Redskins. They'd have to lose to the Redskins in the finale, but, I mean, it's possible.
The most likely outcome, even if the Cowboys lose this weekend, that's the other reason I like the Rams this weekend. This game, it's like, I mean, it matters to the Cowboys, but, like, not really. Like, if you've got somebody who's, all, like, if Tyron Smith is, like, and I'm not saying he is. I'm just saying if Tyron Smith or Amari Cooper is dealing with a foot injury, you should sit them against the Rams and make sure that they are healthy against the Eagles because that is a much more – if you beat the Eagles, you are probably getting into the playoffs even if you lose to L.A.
Brinson, it's hilarious you said that because I literally was thinking during this game watching Lane Johnson go down, watching Alshon Jeffrey go down. I was in my head thinking if I'm Doug Peterson, I just bench everyone like it's week 17. I know it's only going to be week 15, but I leave everyone. I say, guys, get healthy. I need you healthy for that Cowboys game in week 16. No one's playing. We'll go out and we'll get some backup quarterback off the bench to sign for – who's the backup? Sudfeld?
Yeah. Josh McCown.
Philly? Yeah. So we got McCown and Sudfeld. Those guys are playing. Carson, you have 2 weeks to heal. I'd bench everyone in week 15. I don't think that's crazy.
That would have been fun.
Sound crazy.
Yeah.
Hey, I have a compromise for the Eli Manning Hall of Fame conversation. Now that the Eagles have taken the all-time lead, I think Eli's career record is now 116 and 117, I believe. So if he's going to get in the Hall of Fame, I think his Hall of Fame speech guy has to be David Akers. And that way, everyone wins. Remember the draft? David Akers at the draft going off in Dallas?
Yeah, I get down for that.
He's definitely getting into the Hall of Fame.
I'm always down for a kicker giving any sort of speech, so of course I'm down for that.
How many games do you think Eli plays the rest of the season?
All of them.
Oh, yeah?
They brought Saquon Barkley back early from a high ankle sprain. He hadn't been the same. So, I mean, he was averaging 7.8 yards per carry before the high ankle sprain, and now he's averaging 3.04 yards per carry.
He looked fine out there. He wasn't limping around or anything.
But I wouldn't say he looked fine. He looked okay.
Well, you
he
also look the same. Going to be 49ers.
There's literally no reason to risk injury to your franchise quarterback.
Saquon and Daniel Jones should both sit out the rest of the year, honestly. The season's over. Like, stop running them out there with high ankle sprains.
If David Jones is healthy, he needs to play. So I would let him go out there.
I don't know. Give Eli his farewell tour. You have two home games left. And don't put your quarterback out there unless he's 100%. I don't think he's going to be 100% before the season's over.
Okay. If he's not 100%, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I mean, Saquon played fine. He's fighting through, but he's fighting through it. Like, clearly, like, he's not as explosive as he was before the high ankle sprain. We all agree.
Is that clear? I mean, he looked pretty explosive tonight.
I don't think he's looked that
good. The team sucks.
I don't think he looks.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason. Look, they're a 2-win team. Who cares? It's not worth arguing about. Let them rest.
Well, let's talk about a 10-win team, the New England Patriots. Sean Breach, this is your personal Book of Eli.
Oh, nice.
The Book of Eli. One chapter left to be written. What could it? And the Eagles have won. All right, moving along. You said you tweeted out something that got you in a lot of hot water with Pats fans. Can you? And I know that this is sort of your thing. You like controversies. You like the Patriots. You like page views. Give us the quick and dirty rundown of exactly what's happening. I talked to JJ about it before, but that'll come up after the thing. The Patriots have been caught filming the Bengals, right?
That is correct. And no one knew about this except for the Bengals employees. Zach Taylor has press conference. And someone, Dave Lapham, the Bengals radio guy, so he was up in that press box in Cleveland. And Lapham on Monday asked Zach Taylor, hey, man, was there something fishy going on with the Patriots? Taylor was so vague, and everybody, it just raised eyebrows from everyone who heard it or saw it when he said, I'm not going to worry about it, but the league's investigating. Investigating what? Oh, the Patriots might have been videotaping the Bengals? So it got really weird. And so obviously you have one faction of people, Patriots fans.
Give the full rundown. Like, there's I just want to make sure we get the facts to all the listeners. Like,
okay,
there was a cameraman who was videotaping. There's a Bengals employee saw a cameraman in Patriots gear videotaping down in the field. And look, you see a guy in a Patriots gear and there's not a Patriots game going on and you're playing the Patriots next week. You sort of get a little bit of red flags there, right? Like, that raises some questions. And the guy was apparently, this is according to Diana Russini of ESPN, was watching the monitor and kept seeing Bengals coaches being part of the film. So he went and told Bengals PR, and this is like a guy who just works in the field. Bengals PR goes and gets security. They get the guy, apparently. And then at this point, the guy is like offering to like delete the film and forget everything, which is a very bizarre.
That's another red flag. Like,
that's the biggest red flag. He's like, if we just delete this all and pretend it never happened, that'd be great. And then the Bengals tell the NFL is investigating and take it back, Breach.
And so now you have everyone wondering, well, what did happen? Did the Patriots purposely film the Bengals because they were trying to get a leg up in the competition, which isn't crazy because we all know what happened in 2007 with Spygate. It is something that absolutely happened that the Patriots filmed someone and they got punished for it. They lost a first round pick. Bill Belichick got fined $500,000. And so in this situation, you have Patriots fans screaming that, it's just, we're doing our job. There were immediately reports from multiple national reporters saying that the Patriots had a film crew at the stadium because they were filming a documentary, a behind-the-scenes documentary about their pro personnel scout. And basically, they were doing a day in the life of an advanced scout, a guy who looks at the next opponent, goes to the game, and looks at everything that's going on.
It's called Do Your Job, and they do it on various members of the Patriots. It's been happening for a while, and this was on the advanced scout of the Bengals game.
Right. There are 7 prior episodes. This presumably would have been the 8th episode. Except, like Brinson said, bringing a camera up into the press box and filming the field is a no-no. And the initial report said that the Patriots were not filming the field, that they were filming only their employee and only within the confines of the press box. Well, whoop-de-doo, what happens at 10:30 at night? The Patriots release a statement saying, we're guilty. We did it. Our 3-man crew was illegally filming the field. We broke NFL policy, but there was a huge catch with their statement. They said these were all independent contractors. They didn't know league rules. So, yes, it was kind of our fault, but it really wasn't because we didn't tell these guys what to do. So they admitted to breaking league rules without taking – I mean, they took responsibility, but – go ahead, Sean.
They were basically trying to say we broke league rules, but we weren't trying to. There was no, like, malice involved. It was a – purely an accident, and I believe they turned over all the footage to the NFL. The thing I always keep coming back to when this news broke originally, and it kind of broke in that weird way where Zach Taylor was answering these questions, and you're like, wait a minute, like, Spygate Part 2? Like, what? Is the reason why I don't want to blame the Patriots about this is why would they feel the need to film the Bengals? Like, they could beat the Bengals if they went out there on the field and suddenly blindfolded. And the only thing this news, I'll let Breach, you can have your defense in a second. The only thing I'll say is that with this thing breaking, I just got to say, Patriots are favored by 9.5. I'm taking the Patriots win by like 500. With this controversy out there now, they are just going to slam Andy Dalton turf. They are going to run up the score because they are now going to be mad that this has turned into a big story.
Well, I would say they can't win by 500 because their offense can't score that much, Sean. So more like 25. That's about all their offense. Okay. It'll be 25 to nothing. But the other part of that, the reverse theory of why would they film the 1-11 or 1-12 Bengals is because maybe they're filming all the teams. Maybe this isn't different. That would be like the opposite to what you're saying. So I guarantee that any team that's playing the Patriots is going to be scouring their press box for the next few weeks. You get to the playoffs, they're playing the Ravens. I'm sure that John Harbaugh had that press box shut down so that no advanced scouts can show up in there. So it is, I think it's a dicey situation.
Well, Bill Belichick was asked about it. He was on WEEI earlier in the afternoon. This is before the Patriots released their statement. Is everybody sort of scrambling? And again, like, that's a good point, Breach. You could tell, like, you can sort of see which way the wind blows here. Like, the Bengals, we hear from like Paul Daner Jr. that it's the Bengals. It's like this weird videotaping thing. You're kind of like, come on. Like the Patriots are videotaping the Bengals. And then like immediately national reporters are like blitzing out like, the Patriots didn't do anything wrong. It's just recording like da 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 da. Then Belichick goes on radio and had this to say.
This story out of Cincinnati, which is crazy. Bengals source telling the Cincinnati Inquirer they dealing in this last week's game in Cleveland. Do you have a comment?
Yeah, I heard about this, and you know, evidently this is our production people on the TV show that were there, and I have absolutely nothing to do. We have absolutely nothing to do with anything that they produce, direct, or shoot or anything. I've never even seen any of their tapes or anything else. So this is something that we 100% have zero involvement with. This is something that you'd have to talk to the production people about or what they were doing or whatever it was.
So was this your advance?
We've never seen anything that they've shot other than what's been on TV.
I love when Bill Belichick gets in a little bit of hot water these days. like he did the same thing with Deflategate. He gets up there, he's like very earnest. He's like, "Oh, listen, hey, fellas, like, this, that. Nah, we don't know anything about that. I can give you a full statement as to my whereabouts on the night of December 8th, 2019. Trust me, you know, this is just another misunderstanding in the long lore of the Patriots. You know how it is."
You cut up the part where he finished and said, "No quid pro quo."
it's all about plausible deniability.
By the Patriots, and the Patriots noted, they said in their statement, they said, "We did send somebody there, a three-person video crew, to the Bengals-Browns game at First Energy Stadium. While we sought and were granted credentialed access from the Cleveland Browns to the video crew, our failure to inform the Bengals in the league was an unintended oversight. In addition to filming the scout, the production crew, without specific knowledge of league rules, inappropriately filmed the field from the press box. The sole purpose of the filming was to provide an illustration of an advanced scout at work on the road. There was no intention of using the footage for any other purpose. We understand and acknowledge our video crew, which included independent contractors who shot the video, unknowingly violated a league policy by filming the field and sideline from the press box. When questioned, the crew immediately turned over the footage to the league and cooperated fully."
Okay, here's my problem with Belichick saying he knew nothing. If you're an advanced scout, who are you are going to talk to because you want his advanced notes that he got from this game? So you're going to talk to him eventually. That is not going to be reported to you on Sunday that your advanced scout got held up as part of an investigation at an NFL stadium. That wouldn't make its way to Belichick by Sunday night.
No, I don't think so. Not with them playing on Sunday afternoon.
The game's over, you do not think in the following hours that he heard the team's being investigated.
Bill Belichick is embarrassed at home by the Chiefs, and someone's going to run up and be like, "Hey, Bill, FYI, Stevie Blashton from down in Southie got caught in Cleveland with a videotape." Like, no, I'm not going to go tell him that. I'll wait till Monday morning.
I'm with Breach. Yeah, they definitely.
Well, even if they did tell Belichick, he ain't going to tell the guy on the radio that. They're just like, "No, I didn't know anything about it." Why does it matter if he knew about it last night or knew about it today?
Because he said he didn't know anything about it. So why not just – he could have said, "You know what? I found out yesterday." If you're going to tell the truth or don't tell the truth, you know? So and if he's not telling the truth about that, then what's he telling the truth about? That's all, Ryan.
Geez. It's not my parents. Settle down, Pop.
Got my tinfoil hat on.
I will
you
say that –
you can't spy on the Bengals expecting you not to put the tinfoil hat on.
I will say that, like, the cynic in me definitely looks at this and says – this is an incredible loophole that the Patriots could have been exploiting for the past 12 months where you're like, we have just a new, cause you tell the team you're playing, you're like, "Hey, we want a credential and we're going to shoot this." And you know, et cetera, et cetera. On the other hand, like, are you really gaining that much by filming the Bengals coaches from the press box in the game? Cause you can watch the coaches on the all 22.
Yeah, but that's happening.
Not as zoomed in. Obviously, it's not the same thing, but like,
also, do you remember earlier, late September, week four, when Sean McDermott flipped out about the two Patriots coaches on the sidelines before the game being on the wrong side of the field? And everyone was like, "Oh, he's just overreacting."
Yeah. It was Bill's son, Steve.
To what you were saying, Brinson, Jeff Schwartz, who played in the NFL for a long time, tweeted that, "I'm not sure what the Patriots were to gain from videotaping the Bengals unless they had audio of them actually talking about the individual plays as they were making adjustments on the sidelines. There are no signals anymore." So that's the other thing that makes me, in addition to it being the Bengals, no offense, Breach, but it's like how much are they actually gaining by trying to do this when they know that if they do get caught, because they've already been caught before, that the punishment will probably be more severe and it will sully their reputation even more.
Well, to Sean's point, if you've already been caught before, how are you not covering all your bases? Literally in the statement, it said, "Oh, we overlooked. We forgot to tell the NFL about this," when you have to tell the NFL. I mean, that's a huge oversight if you're not looking to get caught.
I don't know that you do have to tell the NFL. I think that you're probably fine. Like, I think like in
John's point is that you should do it if you've been caught before, just to cover your bases, to make it look like you're not up to something that you shouldn't be up to.
This is like if you have a parole officer and you're not supposed to maybe leave the country, but you have to go to a funeral outside the country, you probably should call them and tell them that's not my own
story.
Very
specific, by the way.
It's real.
It's very specific. I do think that it is worth noting, like, you guys are talent. You've been on some video shoots. You've been on location for CBS with stuff. You know, sometimes not everything runs smoothly and isn't perfectly organized. So I would just suggest that, like, maybe
this is a two-man operation. They didn't have 50 people there with
It's cameras. You hired three outside camera guys and you're like letting them loose. Like some guys just like running around the, I mean, like run around the press box filming stuff. I can see both sides. I will tell you this. If I'm John Harbaugh though, I am first thing, probably Monday night, definitely Tuesday morning. I'm calling my media guy. Like, hey, could you bring me the list of accredited media members who were at the Ravens Patriots game on that Sunday night? Just want to take a look, see at it and see, see who is here as part of Patriots.com, because I would like to know. And if I'm any other team that's hosted the Patriots, I'm checking out or I'm checking the game before and I'm trying to find out. I'm just seeing at what point the Patriots have visited my stadium. It is like the Browns, by the way, if you're the Browns, you need to alert the Bengals, right?
You just said that the Patriots didn't need to tell anybody.
No. I think the Patriots should have. I'm not saying I don't know if they're required by rule to alert the Bengals.
Listen, man, Freddie Kitchens got enough stuff to worry about other than trying to alert other teams about what other teams are doing in the press box.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, the Patriots weren't playing in the game. And if you know that the Patriots are playing the Bengals next week or you have an inkling they might be playing, you should do somebody a solid and say, hey, FYI.
You think Freddie Kitchens knows who the Browns are playing next week?
No.
There's a lot going on, man. Give him a break.
I bet he didn't know they were playing the Bengals until he walked down the field. Why are we both in orange? This is crazy. Bunch of sardines out here flopping around a can. What are you talking about, Freddie?
Don't coach penalties.
Here's my question about this situation is that the Patriots have literally admitted to violating NFL policy. And you know, Spygate is not – it happened so long ago, but this is kind of a second strike. Like – It is not the same thing. It's not the same thing, but do you think they'll be punished is where I'm going with this. Any type of a fine, anything.
They will probably get fined, yeah.
Here's the thing. It's so hard to tell. Like, you didn't even mention Deflategate because everyone, even people that hate the Patriots, say that was a complete and utter farce.
Yeah, it's fake.
But Tom Brady got suspended 4 games for that. So they could execute Bill Belichick. You just don't know what the punishment's going to be.
Let's go to Al Riveron.
Yeah, Al Riveron will be out there with a rifle and accidentally shoot himself in the face.
Oh, God, Ryan. Yeah, like, we don't trust the NFL to actually, like, appropriately punish the Patriots for this mistake. To Ryan's point, I think it'll be a fine, but would it be that shocking if the NFL was like, oh, we're going to dock them a fourth-round pick?
And frankly, it wouldn't be shocking if the NFL is like, we've concluded our investigation, they did nothing wrong, moving along.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the NFL would prefer that, although the NFL might like a little juicy, like little December pay. The NFL does not mind December Patriots drama because like that is getting people hot and bothered online. People are talking about nothing but the NFL. I don't know. I don't think the NFL minds this.
The only thing I want to see absolutely next week is after the game, after the Patriots win 41-3, I want Zach Taylor to go into his press conference, act pissed off and be like, the only reason they beat us is because they cheated and they filmed us. And it would have never happened and act completely serious, and that would completely bring this thing full circle.
See, I want Tom Brady to score a rushing touchdown and run around the end zone going like this, like with a little camcorder, like holding up a fake camcorder to his eye and acting like he's filming everybody. That'd be even better.
What if the NFL actually awards the Bengals the victory? The Bengals now have 2 wins, and they lose the first overall pick of Joe Burrow, all because Breece wouldn't shut up about this thing, and he's stuck with a team that has Ryan Finley for the next 15 years.
Breece did have a good point. This is the tweet that got Breece yelled at by a bunch of Patriots fans, but like the report from Spygate was that Patriots, the people involved, have been instructed if they were caught to be like, I'm filming something for the team website, which is like, I mean, like, did anybody look on Patriots.com to see if there is a Do Your Job series? Or do we just assume that's true?
I found one of them.
Yeah, a bunch of them, I think.
Yeah, they did. I saw one on looking at draft prospects, which the Bengals could probably stand to watch, to be honest. So maybe the Bengals should go on Patriots.com. I think one of the funniest things I saw today is that, this whole thing was about a Patriots advanced scout, and the Bengals got suspicious because they didn't know what an advanced scout was.
That is really good.
So do we do we think that, like, I need to kind of watch these because, like, I'm curious, like, is it this is the only thing that gets me. If only this were, like, the Chiefs or the Texans or the Ravens or the Colts. Like I said,
Breece just told you. It could be a sorry for the feedback, but it could be a history of things.
No, but I'm saying, like, it would be so amazing if the Patriots long con was to, like, do seven, like, video, like, stories about, like, employees who do their job on a day-to-day basis, all so they could get inside information about the Ravens and fill in the Ravens coaching staff for the AFC Championship game. But then that whole thing is blown up. That whole conspiracy theory is blown up because it's the stinking Bengals, and they're not cheating to beat the Bengals. They're just going to do what dumb coaches won't do, which is run outside zone runs, and they're going to beat the Bengals by 100 points because the Bengals are trash, Andy Dalton sucks, and they can't beat anybody.
I mean, like, half that was true.
I mean, if you think the 49ers are going to lose to the Eagles, then the Bengals very easily could beat the Patriots this weekend.
Bengals could beat the Patriots this weekend. The Patriots aren't that good.
They're not. I'm going to be in Vegas, and I'm betting against the Bengals. That is how not confident I – yeah, that's where we are with the Bengals season.
That could put a money line sprinkle on the Bengals.
No, I'm not putting anything on the Bengals.
The Bengals' strengths actually line up against the Patriots' weaknesses. They can run the ball.
Can you please shut up? I'm getting angry with your trolling.
He likes to talk himself into these things. It's the, like, Patriots, you know, the Jets are making a playoff push. The Broncos are making a – he was killing the Joe Flacco trade to Denver for, like, months, and then all of a sudden he decided, like, oh, you know what? Mahomes is going to regress, and and Joe Flacco, sneaky good, underrated. This
Did
is
I
what Brenton does.
Joe Flacco trade?
Everyone killed it.
Because
everyone has killed it from start to finish except you and – Wilson briefly deviated along with you, but that luckily he jumped. He jumped off the ship.
I did say that getting a fourth round pick was a bit of a steal for Joe Flacco, I think. you're right. I do have a subhead here. What were the Broncos thinking when I wrote the story on the piece? So I may have killed him for that.
And real quick, here's a few of the Patriots. So that whole scout thing, they were videoing for a do your job trailer. I'm using air quotes. The subjects they had covered so far were the equipment staff, their athletic training staff.
They covered the equipment staff before the Chiefs came. They didn't really do that, but it was awesome if they did.
The athletic training staff was one of them. They did a do your job trailer on the Patriots video department, which was probably pretty interesting. We could learn some fascinating things there. They did one on what it takes to feed the Patriots. And then they did one on being a dietitian. So one of them is how much food the Patriots eat. The other one is, like, the types of food. Yeah, so that is kind of what we're looking at. And then all of a sudden, this was the first one where they decided to do it on location. All the other ones have been done in Foxborough. And this one, they decided to go to Cleveland.
My favorite part of this is that it's given, like, Bengals fans. They were so resigned to their fate that, like, they suck going to get the top pick. And now on Twitter, they're all, like, fired up. Like, they're taking this as, like, a personal victory.
You can't come get us, Belichick.
I know. They're taking this as, like, a win. And it's fantastic to watch on Twitter.
Yeah. All right. That should do it for this. Anything else you guys want to add before we get out of here? All right. You can. Let's, all right. Fun talk. Good times. Let's throw it to Jonathan Jones. He and I are going to break down what he saw when he was up in New England.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, welcome back. Now joining us, first time, inaugural spot on the Pick Six podcast, senior NFL writer, fellow North Carolinian, Tar Heel, unfortunately, right now. Jonathan Jones. Hey, JJ, when is this is the only time I'll be able to say this, probably for the rest of our lives and the entire duration that we work at CBS together. When's the last time that the Tar Heels lost by double digits on the same day that NC State won by double digits?
Yeah, no, that you're right. This is the first time probably ever you'll be able to say that.
That was back in the Big Ten Challenge. I'm just, you know.
Yeah, no, it's been a rough go so far. It's been about as rough as like my voice from traveling in Foxborough and doing these hits on the field for HQ and that cold. And like as a North Carolinian, yeah. Oh boy, it is not treating me well right now.
It ain't right, man. Yeah, exactly. All right, let's, we don't need to belabor the point about bad basketball teams that no one cares about specifically.
That's right.
Let's, you can follow Jonathan on Twitter at JJones9. Make sure to watch him on CBS Sports HQ. It's going to be on every Monday, apparently, through the playoffs and the offseason. Did you know that? I didn't know that.
No, thanks for breaking that news to me.
You were at Chiefs Patso yesterday, and you wrote that the Patriots are not dead. Give me a silver lining for the New England Patriots coming out of the loss to the Chiefs in Foxborough.
Yeah, so if you go back to – first of all, they did not play poorly against the Ravens. The Ravens just played extremely well, right? Yeah. So let's look at their three losses. That's their first one. You look at the Texans, absolutely got mashed out in the first half. And really, that wasn't garbage time that they came back. They almost recovered that onside kick. And then we're going to be like, oh, wow. And so, like
– it wasn't even almost recovered. It. Brandon Bolden, if he, like, tips it to the left a little bit, he's going to, like, pick it up on the fly and run it in. You can do
exactly.
That.
Exactly. Yeah. And yeah, you can. And so people, I think, looked at that as garbage time scores, and I don't view it as that. And then you look at this Chiefs game, and of course, like anybody who watched or as by now is listening, knows about the officiating. This really should have been a 3 or 4 point game there at the end. They had a chance to tie it even at the end. And so the point is that in their three losses against the three elite teams in the AFC, the other three elite teams, they've played a solid game where they just got beat by the Ravens. They put together two solid halves out of four against the Chiefs and against the Texans. They just haven't put it all together. And again, that's silver lining. That's Pollyanna. Every Pats fan wants to be undefeated. I get all that. But like, I don't see, while it is an anemic offense a lot of times, I'm not seeing an offense that has absolutely no hope. There is no light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And I think one of the things too is that like, I mean, look, Tom Brady's 42. he doesn't have, and on the final play, I got into it with Dan Orlovsky on Twitter. I'm curious what you think.
Did you see
that?
No, I didn't, but I'm just rooting you on because you're my teammate.
Oh, thanks. Well, I mean, I wouldn't like get into it. It was just like, he was like, this is Tom Brady being fed up. He's not throwing to Jacoby Myers. He's sick of Jacoby Myers. And this has nothing to do with Jacoby Myers being an NC State guy, by the way. But he's like, Jacoby Myers, he's like, he dropped three balls. He doesn't trust him. I was like, well, not to question you, you're a former NFL quarterback. I'm not, and you know, I'm not saying I can read what's going on here, but like, the play on the final play in question, the fourth down, it was very clearly designed to get Julian Edelman in single coverage and to give Tom Brady a look to the end zone to Julian Edelman. But the problem is Isaiah Wynn got smoked by Frank Clark in the pass rush. Brady had no time. He had to throw it quickly, and Breshad Breeland made a great last play. Like, it was just a good football play. I think we're over. I get it. Tom Brady's frustrated. I get it. But do you think he's just fed up and sick and tired of playing with these guys who aren't like Wes Welker and Randy Moss and Julian Edelman? I mean, like, where do you think he stands on that in reality?
Yeah, I mean, I think he understands that he's going to have to deal with this. And so in the post-game press conference, it wasn't dour Tom Brady. It wasn't short and cutting people off. And after 2 minutes, it's like, okay, guys, like, you know, he did crack a couple smiles. He joked about how he'll be on the injury report this week. I think he understands that this position that they're in as a leader on this team, it probably doesn't help if he continues to give fodder to people like us throughout the week. And so he kind of changed his tune a little bit after that. Also, if the Patriots, and I know it's about Tom Brady, but if the Patriots didn't trust Jacoby Myers, they wouldn't have thrown that halfback pass to Jacoby Myers, because that was a crucial play. And I was with him at his locker last night after the game. He said, listen, I appreciated that the coaches were still letting me on the field at that point. He literally said that. So,
really?
Yeah. So, you know, the fact that that Tom Brady may or may not be looking certain guys way or whatever, he obviously likes Julian Edelman. He obviously trusts James White. After that, it's a bunch of guys. We can all say that and be comfortable and confident in saying that.
Jacoby Myers is literally an undrafted free agent rookie. Like, he's not supposed to be. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's a jet. I mean, like, he probably should have been drafted in hindsight, and he had a great preseason, and that raised expectations a little bit. But again, on that final play, if you watch it, he settles into the zone to try and draw Tyrann Mathieu in on him. He wasn't like, sure. If they wanted, if they wanted to get him isolated and to give Tom Brady a look to Jacoby Myers, they would have ran him on a full crossing route. And by the way, if they'd done that, he would have had a touchdown because Breland was following Edelman on the corner route. But anyway, I just thought that it was a little over, like the Chiefs kind of flipped that game really fast. And I don't know that I think it was a combination of Tom Brady. First they have to punt on their second possession after a march on the first, aided by penalties. Then they get a blocked field goal. Then Tom Brady throws an interception on the first play. And in that same time span, Patrick Mahomes has engineered seven play touchdown drives, right? And the Patriots changed what they did on defense in the second half, and it really limited Patrick Mahomes. They said, all right, we're not going to play man to man and let you, and just try and guard Tyreek Hill. We're going to sit, we might play man, but we're going to sit back and keep everything in front of us. And that changed if they'd done that from the get go, I don't know that the Chiefs are up big and it's a different game. You know what I'm saying?
No, absolutely. And this is kind of like the inverse of what happened in the AFC Championship game,
yeah,
where the Patriots came out against the Chiefs at Arrowhead, and the Chiefs were not expecting so much man-to-man defense, and it fooled Patrick Mahomes at the beginning. And then we obviously remember that second half and overtime. So it was interesting to see these sort of reversed a little bit. So, I believe that these Patriots, so long as they beat the Bills in week 16, which I believe that they will, but I also believe that that's going to be a very good ball game. So long as the Patriots beat the Bills, they're going to maintain a top two seed. They're going to be able to play in Foxborough, at least for the divisional round, and that will be solid for them. But if they lose to the Bills, Will, and I don't think they're going to do it, but if they do that, and then they have to go on the road in the wild card, whether it's against the Bills or if they somehow fall to the wild card, which
I actually,
you don't think that's going
to
happen.
No, right? No, I don't think it will. So they would have to lose. They have to, because I did the math on this already, actually, last night.
Okay, thank you.
Well, yeah, I was doing the same thing. I was like, oh my God, the Bills can still win the division. It would come down to common games.
Okay.
If there's a tie. So the Patriots would have to lose twice, meaning they have to lose to the Bengals, Bills, two or three Bengals, Bills, and Dolphins. Right? Or is it Jets? It's Dolphins, because they beat the Jets with Falk and with Darnold. Yeah, so right. It's the Dolphins, and it's the Dolphins at home. It's not the Dolphins in Miami with that weird Miami club voodoo.
Whatever's going on over there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever drugs they put in the water. So yeah, I mean, like, I think that they will win two or three worst case just because of the pass defense and who they're going against. If they don't, then that's a whole different ball game and they would have to go on the road, but they're going to have a home playoff game. Worst case, one home playoff game. And then they got to go at KC at Baltimore. Now that would be a nightmare.
Yep.
But it's doable. I mean, they could win those games. I think I agree with you though. If they can get where they just need two playoff games, you have to get the bye. And then you get two playoff games, one at home against some wild card team that may get beat up in the first round. It could be the Titans, who the hell knows. And then you just either got to go to Baltimore and win one game against the Ravens, and that's it.
And if you're going to win the Super Bowl, okay, so what? You got to go on the road to Baltimore. They had to go on the road to Kansas City. They did that, but they absolutely have to be at home for the divisional round.
And that's the thing. It's like, it's not about – last year, it's the same thing. It wasn't about the Patriots dynasty is crumbling. It's just, okay, this is a difficult set of circumstances. You're going to have to beat a good football team on the road, but you have Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, and Tom Brady might not look awesome the whole game, but he's got some sack up in him and he's going to make some drives and he's probably going to have a chance to win the game.
He's got some what up in him?
Yeah, he'll sack up and he'll go win the game. What did you make of the refs? Because I screamed about him on the podcast last night. I mean, that was bad, man. That was
Boger's really bad. So
like, what?
He's been really bad. And this really dates back. It dates back a while. But remember, it was the Saints. No, excuse me. It was in the Superdome. It was the Niners-Ravens Super Bowl. And Boger's crew got that game. And everyone, and it was also the referee strike or lockout year. Yeah. Everyone was like, that crew? Yeah. And there were rumors and reports that the NFL had wiped his slate clean and had somehow placed him into that role for reasons unknown. But I remember he was the ref for the Cam Newton. You're not old enough to get – or no, that was Ed Hockley. Yeah. But he got in Cam's face one time at a game. Just a whole bunch of stuff that has always followed Jerome Boger around. And then last night, that it was a comedy of errors. That cannot happen at this level. They were picking up flags. They weren't marching off 10 yards, and they were instead marching off 5 yards on a hold. Obviously, the N'Keal Harry there is no real fix to it, though, because he's one of the most senior referees that's out there. I would understand it if it was one of these new guys who came in who were filling these gaps for the Steratores and everyone else who's leaving. But he's an OG almost.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like Jeff Triplett when he was botching that Chiefs-Titans game. It's like, oh, you got to retire this guy. Like, this isn't some
dude
who's – do you think – so the Belichick didn't talk about it, and that's just what he's going to do. He's pissed off after a loss. He's going to grumble his way through it. Again, look, doesn't do any good to get fined by the league for complaining about refs when he understands that that's just the situation. Do you think there's a solution out there where – I mean, how would you handle challenges? Because like Belichick maybe shouldn't have challenged a spot. I get it. But to me, it's unfair. It's constitutional.
Was it a two-for-one? I couldn't tell in the press box. Was it a two-for-one? Like, was it a spot? And then was it also a pass interference?
That's a good question. I don't think he was going to get PI, but he might. No, because he caught the. Oh, he's saying it would have been an OPI.
It would have been OPI because it would have been within 1 yard or past 1 yard.
Maybe. I mean, I think he looked at. Here's the thing. He had two challenges left. And he looked at it and said, okay, it was the second half, right? I'm not crazy. It was the second half. And he said, I'm going to challenge this. And I think there's a leverage here where if I can get it to be fourth down, Andy's probably going to punt because Andy's conservative. Right. I'll get the ball back. So he challenged it and lost it. It should not be incumbent on Bill Belichick to anticipate two glaring mistakes by the officials. No,
but again, that is the NFL today, yeah, where these officials and Jerome Boger's crew might make two glaring mistakes.
Yeah.
Now, if we want to change this to, you know, you get a third challenge after two successful challenges, I'm okay with you can challenge up till two unsuccessful challenges.
Ooh, I like that. I like that.
And so in that case, he would have had a challenge for that third challenge, the Kill Harry touchdown. He would have had that, and then he would have maintained another challenge. Now, of course, that means that the game could go on and on forever. You could challenge everything that you know is right. Of course, that's never going to happen.
Right.
But I'm of the mind that you lose your challenges once you have two unsuccessful challenges.
I like that solution because – Belichick should not be punished. He should not be unable to challenge the in-Kill Harry situation, which is plain and simple. Like Jerome Boger said it in the pool report afterwards to Mike Reese. I'm sure you got the copy too. I mean, like, he was like, well, the guy was blocked. So the next closest guy huddled up and they said, how close was he? I think he was out of bounds. It's like, that's not, we have cameras. Like just pause and be like, hey, what? Like, and
call into New York. Call in. I don't care if you press a button real quick and just be like, hey, Al. Al, was that a touchdown?
Right.
And
if was he says, out of bounds like, or not? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm okay with that.
But it's the same thing with the fumble too that drives me nuts is like the Kelsey fumble. There are certain actions where like if you rule in Kill Harry out, you know that it's not challengeable. So like there's no fixing it. You can't change it once you rule him out. If you rule a touchdown, it's automatically reviewed. Like you gotta be going through that in your brain as an official and be like, okay, we can like ease the burden on ourselves by ruling this a touchdown. And then you have to have the evidence has to overturn it. I get it. But like if he'd been out, it would have been very clear. And the same thing with the fumble, like just don't blow the whistle.
Don't blow the whistle. And this is not a subjective call. Like he was not out. We see the green in between the white shoe and the white line. So this is not a subjective call. Just like let it go and figure it out. And if he was out, that's a very easy mark. As far as the Stephon Gilmore play, it is difficult because, and I'll just say this because I do think that they should have let it go. However, what happens when on one of these very obvious ones where Travis Kelce's arm was obviously down and they let the play go and somebody gets their clock cleaned and somebody gets concussed or somebody pulls a hamstring, Tyreek Hill's trying to chase him down. Something happens on what should have obviously been a dead play. That is that's what they're weighing. And so on that part, it's difficult for me, but I at least understand it far more than N'Keal Harry.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you. And the other thing too is like, if you don't blow the play dead and it's really close, you have to have enough visual evidence to overturn it, which means by being lackadaisical about blowing the whistle and saying, I don't want this to like, that's why to me, there needs to be an eye in the sky situation where, you know, let the referees do well, even then it doesn't matter. Cause once you blow the play dead, there's no touchdown. So like, I don't know. That one's just tough.
And here's what Steratore told me. Last year when I did this story, following the NFC title game, there needs to just be an eighth official on the field. He said the game is getting wider.
Yeah.
There are, you know, I mean, there's 11 personnel everywhere. The game is now using more of the field. We just simply need more eyes on it. And everyone is saying that they need more eyes on it, but they're taking that to mean the sky judge. But these seven officials that are on the field, if you add an eighth in, Sarah Jor was saying he believes that will help the process. And I'm inclined to agree with the great Gene Sarah Jor on this one.
For sure. And you know what? Someone who else, Debo, maybe I don't remember who I talked to anymore. Somebody else told me that too. They were like, if you add another official on the field, it's going to dramatically change how people view everything. And like, it's a $14 billion business. Okay. That literally millions of people are watching on week to week. Like, let's pay an extra official to get out there, train somebody, right, get them out there.
We're talking about 14 people probably.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Right. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. No, we're talking about 14 jobs, part-time jobs. I don't know that the NFL can afford that. I don't know. I mean, maybe they might be short. Who knows? How do you have enough money to pay for that?
Just keep finding the players to pay for the officials.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Just do a final players fund. That'll go over really well in the next CBA discussions. How hurt do you think Patrick Mahomes is?
You know, I think that he was so cold last night that he kind of forgot how much he was hurting. I would imagine today he is hurt, if that makes sense. You know, being out there on that field, like, it was really, really cold, and you don't know if you're hurt or not. You don't know what you're feeling. But I would imagine he's pretty banged up today. But the thing about the kid is he played through that ankle. He wanted to play through the knee, right? He was ready to come back 5 days later. And so he is obviously a tough kid. So he's going to be able to come back and play through that. I hope that he doesn't throw a single pass in practice all week, though.
I'm with you. I would sit him. You won the West.
No, you can't sit him because the first round bye is still in play, and you hold the tiebreaker over both Baltimore and Kansas.
Yeah, I don't think Baltimore's in play. Probably
they're not. But because you hold that,
yeah, I'm with you.
Two teams in front of you, you just can't.
Yeah, and look, you can't go into the Denver game. Is it Denver? No, who are they? Is it Denver?
I think they have Denver. Yeah,
yeah, they do play Denver. In fact, that's the game where Mahomes got hurt the first time. And Matt Moore had to save the day. Yeah, I'm fine. You don't sit him if he's healthy enough to play him. But I would just be cautious. Like, if you play him and he sustains a long-term injury and you are already in the playoffs, you may cost yourself a chance at the Super Bowl. But did you see his girlfriend tweeting today?
I did not, but it's not the first time I've been asked. Like, did you see what Patrick Mahomes' girlfriend tweeted? So what did she tweet?
She tweeted, it's pretty good. It's aggressively salty. I like it. I respect it. But she tweeted, where the hell is this? Oh, here it is. All Patriots fans, quote, we still have 6 Super Bowls. LOLOLOL. Once Patrick has been in the league as long as Brady, then chat to me about Super Bowls. Patrick is 24. Brady is 42. You just wait. Clap, clap emoji. I don't know that I'd do that. I don't.
Don't do that.
If my wife was out here tweeting stuff like that, I'd be like, I would be walking downstairs like, what are you doing? Why are you trash talking like Connor Orr at MMQB? Connor writes articles? Wait till my husband's been in this biz for 10 years.
Yeah, no, it is tough because listen, she has every right to speak for herself. She has every right to have a mind of her own. She has her platform, all of those things, but it's just one of those things like, are you speaking for me? Because if it were me, I don't need you to do that. I'm glad that you got my back. I love you. You're my ride or die, and I appreciate that. But, like, I don't need all that.
Yeah, please. You're making life harder on me. You may not have seen this. Debo just alerted me to it, but I'm going to tell you since we're talking about it. So Paul Daner Jr., you know Paul? Paul's a good guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, love Paul. Friend of the program, come on the podcast, says – this is literally the first I heard of this. At the question of it being alleged a Patriots official had a videographer filming the Bengals sideline from the press box in Cleveland on Sunday, Zach Taylor had no comment, only saying he was, quote, aware there was an incident and, quote, the league was investigating it, end quote, but had no comment. So the Patriots are now being you're trying to tell me that the New England Patriots, on the day that they're playing the Kansas City Chiefs, are rolling someone down to Cincinnati. We're on to Cincinnati a day early, and we're going to film the one-win Bengals. We're going to Cleveland, and we're going to film the one-win Bengals and try to get their offensive approach or defensive approach so we can take care of business against Cincinnati. That feels a little concocted to me.
So here's what jumps to my mind is this is obviously an advanced scout. So teams do this all the time. They send – They send their advanced scouts to the press box. They sit in there among the scribes, usually off to the side. As far as videotaping, are we talking about a tripod and an actual Nikon? Or are we talking about like, hey, was he like doing portrait mode on his iPhone 7 of something through the press box? And, you know, obviously, if it's a tripod and a real full camera, that's really interesting. But if he's just taking a video like any other Joe that's sitting in the stands of something, like, I don't know about all that. So that's a very odd thing to have happened. That's also an odd thing to have alleged happen. So I'm interested to see how that unfolds.
You think, I mean, like, come on. Like, you tell me the Patriots are trying to film Zach Taylor's play calls? I refuse to believe that Bill Belichick would stoop that low.
Well.
Okay. I don't refuse to believe it. It's possible.
I believe that he'll do a lot to win football games and find that extra edge. And, you know, if there's nothing in the rule book that says, hey, my advanced scout can't shoot with his iPhone in the press box like Will Brinson or Jonathan Jones can, then, you know, whatever. I don't know that was the case.
Yeah,
but
I don't know the answer. Is that illegal? I assume anybody can go sit in the press box and record, right?
Well, honestly, I remember there was a protest at Bank of America Stadium back when I covered the Panthers, and they had unfurled this thing and they were protesting.
I was there. It was that Monday night game against the Colts.
That's right. That's right.
They're protesting the oil. They're protesting the fracking.
Yes, that's what
Dude
it was.
Dude was hanging from the freaking repeller thing. It was insane.
And so everyone in the press box starts taking pictures and posting them, and the Panthers are getting very embarrassed. The Panthers, at that point, owned by Jerry Richardson, of course, easily embarrassed by a lot of things, but not by what they should be. and so we had members of the Panthers staff come in there and say, hey, that's actually against the credential rules to be posting photos and videos from inside the press box.
Yeah,
and I was like – yeah, they're like, you know, check the bylaws on that. I'm like, you don't want to pick this.
Yeah, Prabs, why don't you check this? I'm going to be filming this guy rappelling from the side of the press box. Like, if you can't stop the guy from rappelling inside the stadium, that's not my problem. Also, that's like one of those times where like, it was the same thing with that you talk about that, the Saints, or the 49ers, Ravens Super Bowl in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Where it's like, at the moment, you're like, this is crazy. And then you're like, oh crap, this might be like a terrorist attack. You know, like
that's what I heard from people who were in there. I didn't like on television, and we're all making funny jokes and memes on the internet when it happened. But like the things that I heard from people in the press box, they were like, yeah, the first thing I thought in my head was this is a terrorist attack. I was like, whew, yeah, that's not very funny.
It's not funny. I because I remember we were out in the auxiliary press box for that game. It was like the power went out, but it was still like kind of a little bit lit. You're in the big stadium. So there's like some still like lights and stuff, like, you know, computer screens still charged up and all that. And I was like, well, this is crazy. Like the power just went out, and you start walking around. You're like, oh, like this is not like, what if this is something more? Oh my God, this is panic. And then the next year, I think had been the Seahawks Super Bowl, Seahawks Broncos.
That sounds right.
In New York. Well, that game, we left the press box to go downstairs early, and it had, you know, it was a blowout. It was like a 45-6 or whatever. And so like, and they had TVs down in the interview room, and there was like 2 minutes left. We're like, all right, come on, we gotta get these interviews going. All of a sudden we hear boom, 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 boom. I was like, oh my God, this is an attack in New York. Great. Lovely. It was the fire. The TV feed was so delayed. It was fireworks going off to celebrate the end of the game. I'm like, they're having a heart attack. Like none of this had ever occurred to me, like until the lights went out in New Orleans. So, And then the repeller, you're like, well, what if this guy's a nut job, like the football game?
Yeah, I didn't think about that at the time because I hadn't experienced those things like you, and so I'm just laughing along with it.
No, I was chuckling also, too. I'm like filming it. I was laughing too, and then I'm like, oh, wait.
Also Googling what he's protesting so that I can like accurately portray that as a reporter.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, I don't know what – that was a good tangent. I don't know how we got off of there. This is recorded Monday afternoon, by the way, in case the Patriots are indicted in federal court for wiretapping and fraud or something like that. Let's get out of here. That was a good talk. Did we miss anything? Miss anything with the Chiefs? No? They're good, right? They're fine.
Yeah, they're fine.
Their defense is actually playing pretty well.
Yeah, they are. I like them. I don't know who's going to come out of this AFC. I take that back. I think the Ravens are going to come out of the AFC. I don't know who's going to come out of the NFC. I have no clues.
The NFC's topsy-turvy. Like, that Saints game flip the Packers to number two, even though the Packers are struggling against the Redskins. Like,
right. And I think the Packers are the fourth best team in the NFC. I think it's a tie at first with San Francisco, with New Orleans and Seattle.
I would put the Packers behind the Vikings, and I'd take the Rams over the Packers.
Wow. That's crazy.
All right. JJ, fun, man. You're not every Monday. Debo informs me you're not every Monday, just Monday during the season.
Okay, that's fine. You know, whenever you want to do it.
Yeah, just breaking news for you on the podcast. Jonathan Jones, follow him on Twitter at JJones9. Listen to him on the podcast. Check him out at CBS Sports HQ. Thanks, buddy.
Appreciate it.
It was a very bright, shining light, Sarajevo, and they needed to kill that light.
From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo, thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2.
U2, they represent a personification of our resistance.
The Hollywood Reporter hails Kiss the Future, moving and inspirational.
Kiss the Future! Viva Sarajevo!
Kiss the Future, new documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount+. Go to Paramount+ to try it free. Terms apply.